Ezekiel, page 74, John Aufrey's book, chapter 5, The Barber's Razor. Chapter 5 concludes the vision that commenced at chapter 3 at verse 22. Ezekiel is still in vision when this chapter opens, and since the events of the first four verses occur in vision, they have to be interpreted in order to be understood. And they are, in fact, interpreted for us in the chapter. Note carefully the instructions given to the prophet in this part of the vision. One, he was to take a sharp knife. The word in the Hebrew is cherub, the usual word for a sword, and is so rendered in the RV. Two, following the RV and the RSV, it seems that the prophet was to use the sword as a barber's razor, and with it to remove the hair from his head and his beard. Three, having done this, he was to take a balance and carefully weigh the hair, dividing it into three equal parts. Four, one third was to be placed upon the tile on which was portrayed a representation of the future siege of Jerusalem. There, the hair had to be burned. Five, one third, again following the RV, he placed around the city on the tile and smote it with the sword. Six, the remaining third, for the most part, was scattered to the wind. 7. Out of this last third, the prophet was to take a few hairs and bind them in the skirts of his garment. 8. Some of these few hairs were to be taken and burned in the fire. 9. Finally, out of these few, a fire was to come forth into all the land of Israel. This is what the prophet saw. And the rest of the chapter is taken up with divinely given clues as to the interpretation. This is Jerusalem, verse 5, means this head that is shaved represents Jerusalem. And clearly the city represents the nation being its capital. God had chosen Israel as his own peculiar people. He had given them his law and set them in the midst of the nations and countries that are round about her. Verse 5 again. This placed that nation in a position of tremendous responsibility. In a very real sense, they, the people of Israel, were meant to be the light of the world. Now, this is the idea presented in Deuteronomy 4. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord, my God, commanded me, that ye should do so in the land whither ye go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. The nations, seeing the blessed state of Israel, the result of walking faithfully in the statutes and the judgments, will be led to acknowledge the greatness of Israel's God. This still is God's purpose with this people, for the gifts and calling of God are without repentance, that is, they are irrevocable. NASB on Romans 11, verse 29. The sin and rebellion of Israel in Ezekiel's time, as also before and since, could not frustrate this purpose. It could only bring the judgment of God because of their failure to rise to this position of responsibility. He drops a footnote on that passage that we read from Deuteronomy 4 as follows. Palestine was fitted by its situation to be a focus of religious influence in the world. It lay between the two greatest of ancient empires, Egypt, that dominated Africa, and Babylon, which ruled over Western Asia. Yet, it was fenced in by desert and mountain from both. On its confines, it had Tyre, the mistress of the Mediterranean. Damascus and Petra on the line of Arabian commerce, and Elath, the port of the for the Indian Ocean. She might have been what the temple of God hereafter will be in Ezekiel 47. A fountain of spiritual life to the world. And this footnote is a quote from William Kay, his book of the prophet Ezekiel. To continue, this spiritual position of Israel at the center of the nations is paralleled by her geographical location. She was, and indeed is today, at the hub of three continents, in a very real sense, the center, Hebrew Tabor, which means navel, of the earth. That is from Ezekiel 38, verse 12 in the RSV. Thus, Israel was placed as a witness to the goodness of God at the center of the nations. But she failed. On the next page in the book, there is a picture and there is a table. The picture, which dates from 1580, is an old map depicting Israel at the center of three continents. It looks a bit like a three-leaved clover. Top left, Europa, top right, Asia, and beneath, Africa. The table compares the verses from Ezekiel's chapter 5 that we're considering and breaks down the references back from mainly Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 32, but sometimes other chapters from Deuteronomy, such as chapter 4, in for example, the fifth verse, I've set it in the midst of the nations, and that's a quote then from Deuteronomy 4, verse 6. So it's quite a long table, and it continues on to two-thirds of the next page. The failure of God's nation is discussed at great length in this chapter. She hath changed my judgments into wickedness more than the nations, and my statutes more than the countries that are round about her. Verse 6. Israel was the custodian of the truth. The light must shine out from her, penetrating into the darkness of the Gentiles. The mercy of God would be revealed through that nation to people ready to receive it. The judgments of God would be manifest through them on nations that had filled up the cup of their iniquity. Thus, in Deuteronomy 7, we read, when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them. Thou shalt destroy their altars, break down their images, and cut down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. The light was to penetrate and to overcome the darkness, but under no circumstances was the darkness of heathendom to interfere with the light that shone out from the people of God. However, Israel failed to live up to her calling. She rejected the statutes and the judgments of God and went a-whoring after the abominations of the nations. In verse 6, they have refused my judgments and my statutes. They have not walked in them. This mention of statutes and judgments reminds us immediately of the law that was given to Israel, and this verse 6 is perhaps a direct reference to Deuteronomy 4 verse 5, as previously quoted. It's interesting to note, too, the reference to Leviticus 26:15. And this chapter abounds with references to the law, or the 30 or so that we have listed above, that is in this table. Alongside the text, there are no less than 17 allusions to Leviticus 26, which of course deals with the curses that would fall upon the head of disobedient Israel. And as anticipated in Leviticus 26, it was because the people had failed to walk in the statutes and judgments that God's wrath was now about to come upon them. So we read at verse 7, following the RSV, therefore, because ye are more turbulent than the nations that are round about you, and have not walked in my statutes or kept my ordinances, and have acted according to the ordinances of the nations that are round about you, therefore I will execute judgments in the midst of you in the sight of the nations. And again we note the reference to nations. Even though Israel had refused to cooperate in revealing God to the Gentiles, yet God would still make himself known to the nations through the people that he had chosen, but now in judgment. And this theme recurs repeatedly in the prophecy. These judgments would assume all the horrific proportions previously assigned to them by Moses, even to the extent of being driven by the severity of the siege to eat the sons in the midst of thee. And speaking of these judgments, God says, I will do in thee that which I have not done, and whereunto I will not do any more the like. But what about the horrors of the Roman siege, described so graphically by Josephus in his Wars of the Jews? Clearly, these were just as severe as the impending Babylonian terrors, if not more so. It seems that we have here an idiom which is found elsewhere in Scripture. For example, the Assyrians are described as a great people and strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall there be any more after it. It's in Joel chapter 2. And Jesus, speaking of the events of AD 70, says, then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. This idiom is used to convey the magnitude and awfulness of an event. Verse 11 of the chapter enlarges on Israel's sin. The sanctuary itself had been defiled, and the list of references to the law alongside the text will show the connection of thought that exists between this verse and the law. And when we come to consider chapter 8, it will be necessary to enlarge on this aspect of Israel's sin. But at this stage, we note again simply the fact that it was Israel's apostasy with the nations which was responsible for the coming judgments. Therefore will I also diminish thee, neither shall mine eyes spare, neither will I have any pity. The Hebrew for I also will diminish is somewhat uncertain, and there are variations between manuscripts. The majority favor the authorized version, I will diminish, and the NIV, I will withdraw, probably signifying that God was to withdraw, diminish, or remove his favour from them. The other manuscripts have, "I will cut down," and that's followed by the RSV and ROTH. Interestingly, the law supports both. Leviticus 26:30 shows that because Israel failed to cut down the idols of the Gentiles, the apostate systems they had set up would be cut down. And Deuteronomy 32:20 teaches that because they had provoked God to anger with the gods of the nations, God would hide his face from them. And that is, withdraw. For 9 centuries, God showed his forbearance and long-suffering towards them. His eyes had spared, and he showed pity. Now is the time for all the anger detailed in their law to be unleashed upon them. "Mine anger shall be accomplished," verse 13. By comparing these final verses of chapter 5 with the references given in the law, in the table, we can see the extent to which the law was indeed being accomplished. One point of particular interest may be mentioned. The evil arrows which God would send upon them, and that's from Deuteronomy 32:23-24, would be for their destruction, it says in verse 16. The word destruction is the same word found in Exodus 12, verse 13. "When I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you for a destruction." That's in the AV margin. Now the time had come, and the angel which God appointed to keep them in the way had now turned to be their enemy, Isaiah 63. The destroying angel was to visit them with destruction. The message of the cherubic visions in chapters 1 and 10. Having thus outlined the reason for the coming judgment, we now come to consider the details of the judgments that were so graphically presented in the first 4 verses. We should consider them in the order enumerated in the section, the vision outlined. 1 and 2, the sharp sword used as a razor. As a priest, Ezekiel was prohibited from shaving his head or his beard. Now, as a representative of the priestly nation, he is to signal the degradation of his people by shaving his head. But as God's representative, he is to do this with the sword, the instrument of judgment. Just as God in the days of Hezekiah used the Assyrian, so now he was about to use the Babylonian. For this reason, King Nebuchadnezzar is styled "my servant." Thus, in this action, Ezekiel, in his priestly capacity, represents God. The sword, the power of Babylon, and the cutting off of the hair by the sword, the cutting off of Israel from association with God. 3, the division into thirds. The balance is a measuring instrument. The weighing of the hair into 3 parts would remind the people to whom Ezekiel later spoke of the way in which David dealt with the Moabites. He spoke Moab and measured them with a line, casting them down to the ground. Even with 2 lines measured he to put to death, and with 1 full line to keep alive. The position was now to be reversed, and Israel would be the nation to be measured by the Gentiles. The balance in Israel was also the symbol of justice. The law that God had given to them commanded just balances, just weights shall he have. Thus, the division of the hair into 3 parts by a balance conveyed the idea that the coming judgments were demanded by the justice of God. 4. Burnt with fire. There's no difficulty in understanding thou shalt burn with fire a third part. It's explained. Verse 12, a third part of thee shall die with a pestilence, and with famine shall they be consumed in the midst of thee. And this is elaborated in these verses. They should be carefully compared with the references given in the table. The appropriateness of representing pestilence, famine, etc. by fire is only seen when we appreciate that we are continually being directed in this chapter back to the law where it is written, a fire is kindled in mine anger, and they shall be burnt with hunger. A prophecy that began with, that was no means exhausted by, the Babylonian invasion of God's land. 5. Smitten with the sword. Again, there's no problem in understanding the message contained in, thou shalt take a third part and smite about it with a knife, that is a sword. For verse 12 again supplies the interpretation, a third part shall fall by the sword round about thee. The reference is to the destruction in actual fighting, the massacre of the unfaithful nation at the hand of the king of Babylon, who was the sword in Yahweh's hand. And when the prophecy based upon such earlier prophecies as Leviticus 26 was fulfilled, as recorded in 2 Kings 25, Zedekiah's sons were among those who were slain. The Babylonian massacre of Israel, however, was only the beginning of a process which would finally bring about the dissolution of the nation until he come whose right it is. 6. Scattered to the wind. A third part thou shalt scatter in the wind is again explained at verse 12. I will scatter a third part into all the winds, and again the reference is to Leviticus 26. Having scattered this third, God says through the prophet, and I will draw out a sword after them. This is a quotation from Leviticus 26:33, and indicated that all those who were scattered to the four winds, that is all points of the compass, all Gentile lands, will be subjected to further oppression. As foretold also in Deuteronomy 28, verses 65 and 66. Again, the reference to these prophecies of Moses indicates that more than the Babylonian invasion is involved. 7 and 8, the fire and the few. We now arrive at the most difficult and yet the most interesting part of this chapter. Thou shalt also take thereof a few in number and bind them in thy skirts, then take of them again and cast them into the midst of the fire and burn them in the fire, for thereof shall a fire come forth into all the house of Israel. Some apply these few who are bound in the prophet's skirts to Gedaliah and his companions who were left in the land after the destruction of Jerusalem and who subsequently went down to Egypt. Contrary to the advice given to them by Jeremiah, they too were to be cast into the midst of the fire. I will punish them as I have punished Jerusalem. But this seems unlikely. For in what way did fire come out from these few into all the house of Israel? As we have repeatedly emphasized, the prophecy is more far-reaching than those events surrounding the Babylonian invasion, and nowhere is this more clearly shown than in a consideration of these few. The idea behind the binding of the few in the skirts seems to answer to the teaching of the prophets concerning the preservation of a remnant who, purged and purified, would eventually return to the land. It is interesting to note that the word translated skirts is the usual Hebrew word for wings. It is the word kenaf, which we have already considered in connection with Ezekiel's vision of the cherubim. That implies protection and covering. This seems to be the idea involved in this part of the vision. Although the sword would pursue the scattered third into the countries where they were dispersed, yet some would be afforded protection and preservation. This is the teaching of Isaiah when he describes this scattered people as God's witnesses, a living testimony to his existence. When thou walkest through the fire, says in chapter 43, thou shalt not be burned, that is, wholly consumed. And this is brought out in Ezekiel 11, where the prophet asks, Ah, Lord God, wilt thou make a full end of the remnant of Israel? And here it should be noted that the remnant is the scattered third, as in verse 10. And not the few in the skirts. And Yahweh replies to the prophet, Although I have cast them far off among the heathen, this is in Ezekiel 11, although I have cast them far off among the heathen, and although I have scattered them among the countries, yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. Therefore say, Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, I will even gather you from the people, and assemble you out of the countries where ye have been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. This teaching of the prophets had an initial fulfillment in the return from Babylon, when a faithful remnant led by Zerubbabel returned to the land of Israel and rebuilt the temple. They are described as the remnant of the people in Haggai chapter 1. They were the few of the scattered third who, having come through the refining process of the captivity, returned to the land and refounded the true worship of Yahweh in the midst of the nations. But again, the problem has to be faced. How could it be said of these returned exiles, a fire will spread from there to the whole house of Israel? As it says in verse 4 in the NIV. It's not long before the regathered nation started on the downward road to apostasy. So that in the time of Malachi, we find them being rebuked for the same crimes for which Ezekiel and Jeremiah rebuked their fathers prior to the captivity. For this reason, Malachi warned of a fire that would come upon them in his chapter 3. He says, Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple. Even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in, behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming? We shall stand when he appeareth, for he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap. The messenger came as it was written of him, and he found this remnant, which now had become established as a nation in the land, no different from their fathers in the days of Ezekiel. So John the Baptist also warned of impending judgment. He that cometh after me will truly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the garner, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. And thus Jesus, born into the house of David, came out of the few who had been preserved and restored again to the land. And by this time the remnant had become unfaithful. They failed to recognize their Messiah and crucified him. And this same one, some 35 years after his death, sent forth the Roman armies and burned up their city. And the nation was burnt with hunger and devoured with burning heat and with bitter destruction. Deuteronomy 32:24. Since Jesus came out of the few, and since he, after his resurrection and ascension, sent forth the fire of God's judgments upon the whole nation, it was in this sense that from the few, a fire came forth into all the house of Israel. The fire still burns and still under Messiah's control will burn with renewed intensity in the not too distant future. But surely the end of burning is near at hand. And again, there's a footnote. It is interesting to note that Zechariah makes a similar prophecy concerning the Jews in the time of Jesus, referring first to the cause of their judgment, the rejection of Jesus. He declares, "Awake, O sword, against my shepherd and against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered." And he next speaks concerning the little ones, about whom the Lord had a great deal to say. "I will turn back my hand over the little ones." He then speaks of the nation in a similar way to Ezekiel, dividing it into three parts. "And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein." Of this third part that survived the Roman Holocaust, it is said, "I will bring the third part through the fire and will refine them as silver is refined and will try them as gold is tried." The refining process designed to remove the dross from that nation continues. It will not be finished until the Lord returns to deliver them from the burning heat and bitter destruction that intermittently has been their lot since they rejected their Messiah.